three proposals are now on the table for the Jacksonville shipyards, including one that would involve a Noah's Ark. More twists and turns in the city's mayor's race, and Rick Scott is suing the feds. It's a standoff over low-income medical funding. We'll tell you about it. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect is always live at 9 and never miss a show. Just catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, we are talking about all the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, a preview of Catholic Charity's big Kentucky Derby Gala event, plus blues musician Selwyn Birchwood, and a look ahead to Spring in the Blues at the Beaches. All of that ahead. But first, this morning it's Friday, and that means it's time for our own weekly roundtable. Here today, Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times Union.
Good morning.
John Burr, our own WJCT analyst.
Great to be here.
And A.G. Gankarski of Folio Weekly and Florida Politics. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Always great to have you guys. Thanks for joining the show. And there's lots of news to discuss from the week. But first, did you hear there are now three suitors, count them, three, for the Jacksonville shipyards? A new applicant has thrown his hat into the ring to take over the abandoned parcel on the city's North Bank Riverwalk. Stephen Grenda of I'm Him, Inc. wants to build a prayer temple and even a replica of Noah's Ark on the grounds where the ships used to be built and repaired. Now, the Downtown Investment Authority is also considering Jaguars owner Shad Khan's big proposal for the site. He wants to develop it. There's also a bid from a company called Shiitake Enterprises from this area as well. But we want to know right now, what would you like to see happen with the shipyards? And let us know your thoughts about this Noah's Ark potentially being built there. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. A.G. Gankarski, a Noah's Ark at the shipyards.
Well, notice it's been raining for about 6 days. We've got 34 to go.
Right.
So get your animals ready. That proposal, nobody takes it seriously. But, you know, it's the ultimate in comic genius. You know, the Faith Healing Center, the replica Noah's Ark.
With the restaurant on top.
Yes, of course. You know, you definitely want that restaurant there. And with the animals on board, it's going to be a good thing. But, you know, really it's just something where it looks like it's Shad Khan and everybody else. You know, it looks, I don't want to say like a foregone conclusion because the city's definitely saying it's not.
Yeah.
But it looks like that's the most serious proposal, that's the most polished proposal, that's the one that's got buy-in from Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. It's the one that has the most solid financial backing, and it's the one that has the most comprehensive plan, but the Noah's Ark is just great theater, and it's the guys in the trailer park making a proposal, and you got to admire his moxie, if nothing else.
You do, and John Burr, Shad Khan has these detailed plans. He wants to do a practice facility for the Jaguars, a marina, amphitheater, hotel, restaurant, retail, the whole nine yards. The Downtown Investment Authority is saying 40% of the winning bid will be calculated based on the applicant's financial ability to follow through. That would seem to give Shad Khan a real edge.
Well, that's 40% for Shad.
Yeah.
You know, it really is, to use another biblical reference, a David and Goliath type of situation here. I don't think David's going to win this one. I think the city is going to be fair about it, and I think they are going to give a fair shot in looking at all three proposals. But you know, when you really get down to it, I mean, I don't see how Mr. Khan's proposal would not be the winner. The Shiitake idea is not bad. I mean, and it also, as he proposes it, does not include any or much contribution from the city. Khan's proposal does. Khan's proposal could be very expensive to the city, you know, $50, $100 million. But so in that case, in that regard, the Shiitake proposal is attractive. But I think at the end of the day, I agree with AG.
Dan Scanlon, Patrick Mullins, Shiitake Enterprises. He's based in Mandarin. He would like to build a luxury marina and yacht repair facility at the shipyards. That's, as John said, that's interesting too.
Well, the two questions I have are, A, do we want another shipyard, even if there is going to be a retail complex and entertainment complex next to it, with the fact that as you go drive by it right now, you're seeing drilling being done to find out what kind of contamination is there from years of doing tankers and everything else. And number two, Shiitake has also had its own financial issues and closed down 4 years ago with a minor, at least on the surface of it, only a minor settlement having to pay. So where is the money going to come from for that?
Yeah, and this is the issue. I mean, you've got to have something sustainable. We've had stops and starts with that area before. We've had, problems for decades with it. And, Shad Khan's proposal is actually integrated with downtown at large. It's the most thought out proposal. It's one that is part of a larger plan. And, it really is something that, stands above the others.
It's also integrated into the stadium and into the Jaguars franchise, obviously. But, it's a world-class proposal. And it's been criticized as being over the top. I don't know. Is Shad Khan over the top? I don't think so.
And if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable here on First Coast Connect. Give us a call as we discuss the top stories of the week. We want you to participate. The number, as always, is 549-2937. And speaking of Shad Khan, it emerged this week that Khan donated $100,000 to the reelection of Mayor Alvin Brown. At the same time, GOP challenger Lenny Curry is opening up a headquarters at the Beaches, which is dominated, for the most part, by Republican voters. New twists and turns in the city's mayor's race this week.
Yeah, and the thing you want to look at with the contributions, the $100,000 from Shad Khan, 50 comes from him personally, 50 from Regent Consultancy, which is his Urbana, Illinois-based company that also contributes to other things. Looking at that out-of-state contribution, it's part of a larger pattern. Out of the 45 contributions to the Taking Jacksonville to the Next Level pack, the Alvin Brown pack, 35 of them are from out-of-state. You've got trial lawyers, you've got union types. You're going to see a big surge in that account in April. Regarding Lenny Curry's Beaches headquarters opening, Lenny Curry's campaign is doing a really big campaign offensive at the Beaches. They're getting endorsements from beach leaders. They did the Beaches Watch Forum last night, and it's a big priority for the Curry campaign. They're counteracting the Brown inroads into the Riverside Avondale area and basically the wholesale appropriation of the Bill Bishop apparatus.
Let's talk about that. Dan Scanlon, the Alvin Brown campaign is going to go after the folks that voted for Bill Bishop in the first election as hard as they can. He won the precincts of Riverside Avondale. Brown has picked up some of Bishop's campaign staff and is paying them. Can Brown pull off a victory if he can pull those voters into his column? And what's Lenny Curry's strategy to win?
Well, I don't know. All I can say is Curry is first out of the gate again with the advertisements. Mrs. Curry showing up a lot everywhere. And I'm seeing nothing that I remember from Alvin Brown yet. And we're a month away from the final election. So, and is he going to hit in what I presume is a very Republican community in Riverside Avondale? I don't know. Is he going to gain anybody even with Bishop's help?
Yeah,
or non-help?
It's interesting to me that Curry is choosing to open this office at the Beach. It's kind of like preaching to the choir. I mean, that, the Beach, he's going to win the Beach.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's seeding Avondale and Riverside to Brown. But I can't believe he is. But it seems to me that really is where he ought to be battling very hard.
But if you're trying to run up your total and get as many votes as possible and run up your margins in a place like the Beaches, then I guess it makes sense to open up an office out there.
Yeah, you definitely want to do that. Something where Curry's been really messaging hard toward the Beaches this week. He did a letter to the editor/op-ed in the Beaches Leader talking about interlocal agreements. He did the Beaches Watch Forum with Alvin Brown last night, and he was very specific in recommendations for the Beaches.
And how did that forum play out?
It played out really well for Republicans. It was a Republican crowd. It wasn't a packed house, but Alvin Brown's message was kind of one size fits all. It wasn't very specific to the Beaches, and we know that the Beaches really prize their local identity. Mm-hmm. So it was, it's really something where Curry sees an opportunity there. Regarding Riverside and Avondale, I do want to make note that Alvin Brown's opening a campaign office in Five Points. I saw a sign going up, sort of a satellite office, and he did a house party in Riverside the other day. you know, with Jesse Lee Wilson, a former bishop adherent who's moved to the Democratic Party. What you're basically seeing is both sides trying to like stack up votes in these areas where they feel the other side is vulnerable.
And we want your calls on the city's mayor's race, 549-2937. Dan Scanlon, The T, reporting this week that so far, when you add up both campaigns' totals, more than $6 million has already been spent, and we're not even into the home stretch.
And yet, again, I say it's only a month away. A knee-jerk reaction, it seems to me, to both candidates opening, satellite offices. And realistically, does anyone care at this moment? I'm seeing signs around for candidates running. I don't know if they are running or if these are leftovers from a few weeks ago that people forgot to pick up. It seems like there's no excitement out there for any of the races left.
And let's talk about that, because we have this unique election system where people are asked to come out in March, just a few months after they voted for something. Well, not a few months, but they voted for president recently. Mm-hmm. They've got to come out in March, and then they've got to come out again in May.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that in itself is not a problem. It is a problem when you have an election cycle that is just not ringing anybody's bell. Outside of the political world, there's nobody talking about this. And, that is a problem. I think it's going to result in, some low turnout. It's also, this election will be decided by who's got the best turnout machine on election day.
Well, and that goes for the mayor's race and the city council races.
Right. I want to go back to the mayor's race just a minute, because if you look at what the Brown campaign did last time, you're going to see it again. Basically, a lot of media toward the beginning of early voting, outside canvassing operations brought in, they use something called Block by Block from Washington, D.C. They bring in these people. They also get people from, the north side locals. I've heard they pay $55 a day or something like that to people. So you're going to have those kind of operations going, and you might not have a lot of voter interest right now, but in 2-3 weeks, the Brown campaign is betting on that happening. The Curry side, meanwhile, they're making a play for absentee voters. A lot of older people vote absentee, and that's already started. And, everybody's kind of counting on 37-38%, just like in 2011. And the real question is the break, are people going to, buy that Alvin Brown has been the mayor that he says he is, or are people going to want the change that Lenny Correa claims to advocate?
549-2937 to join the show. Let's go to Mark in Mandarin. Hey, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Mark. Get off speakerphone, please.
Oh, okay. Let me pick up in the kitchen. I'll pick up in the kitchen.
Okay. And just a blanket request, all of our callers, please don't call us on speakerphone.
Okay, I'm back on.
Okay, go ahead, Mark.
Hi, I'm calling you about April 20. There's a scheduled 4 debates for city council at large, and they're at 4 different locations. And the ones for group 1, 3, and 5 are on a ballot, but those are at 2 different locations. And I called all the TV stations, and they said they can't cover it because they don't have the equipment and people to record at 4 different locations at the same time. I tried reaching the sorority and fraternity that are co-sponsors, and they didn't return calls. I tried the library board of trustees, and they didn't get back to me. Somebody needs to record those and put them on the web or something so that people have a way of listening to those. What's the point of having debates if the voters don't have access to them?
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. I'm so glad you called about that, because we do want to talk about those forums. I'm actually going to be moderating the one between Tommy Hazuri and Jeff Youngblood. There are several forums coming up Monday night for these at-large races. AG.
Yeah, we have 4 forums, as the caller mentioned, libraries across town. And he makes a salient point, which is that, for voters to be engaged in these races, they need to be able to see these debates. And, if you've got the at-large candidates kind of spread out, it's really hard for them to make a citywide case. Fortunately, there are other forums around town throughout the election cycle, not so much in the way of debates, but, there are ample opportunities to engage the candidates. These forums on April 20th are great. They're just one example of many opportunities that people have have throughout the cycle to hear their candidates.
And I would advise the caller to pick the one closest to him in his neighborhood and go to it. Dan?
Well, obviously, the Times Union has been covering this as best we can. We have a few more people on the ground, and we do have on our website access to this, and we're posting these. And I'm also getting snowed under by emails from every candidate still out there telling me about every forum that's happening. So I know that we're getting the word out. So at least there's one place where you should find some follow-up.
And if you go to the library's website, too, you can learn all about these forums and exactly where they'll be, which candidates will be taking place. Let's get a few more of you on the air at 549-2937. Matt in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Melissa. I wanted to point out that the voter low turnout is a result of it not being interesting. I just wish that there was a way that we as a city, or really as a nation, could get together and get excited again about voting. Like, people fight and die for this, and no one seems to care. It's like 30% of people turn out for votes. It's unreal. So that's just basically what I wanted to say, is maybe just have a giant party or something to inspire people to want to go out and vote, or a one spark for voting or something like that. That's all I have to say about that.
Thank you, Matt. I think all of us would agree that the low turnout is disturbing, since some important issues are going to be decided in Jacksonville over the next year. Pension reform, downtown development, dredging the port. John, there are so many issues that will really play a role in quality of life for all of us.
Yeah, and downtown especially is at a tipping point potentially. And, you know, we've got huge issues in this town, and I guess I'm kind of a little perturbed that nobody's bringing these candidates up and saying, hey, what about funding for, you know, whatever? What about funding? How are we going to pay for the dredging? How are we going to pay for $300 million worth of dredging? How can we possibly do that at the same time while we solve the pension? I think people's feet have been held to the fire pretty well about the HMO.
HRO,
I'm right. Sorry. The Human Rights Ordinance.
We're going to talk about HMOs in a minute.
Yeah, I got me. But, I don't know why people aren't getting fired up about these issues.
I do. You listen to these campaigns. You've got a $5 million mayoral campaign with outside consultants basically crafting the message, especially in the Democratic side. And you're getting a lot of the same memes. I mean, it's basically like watching a football team that calls the same five plays over and over again. You're not getting a lot of specific analysis. Jack Del Rio. You're not getting, any real deep dive in the detail. I mean, what Lenny Curry tried to do is he tried to challenge Alvin Brown to debates in every council district, in addition to the three TV debates that he wanted, or going to do two, of course. But, the campaign is being run from 40,000 feet up. Mm-hmm. I mean, think of how many times you've heard 36,000 new jobs over the course
and
of the last Dan, 5 months.
And, Dan, that's really right. New for Jacksonville. On both sides, outside operatives have landed on the ground and have hit the ground and are pushing their candidates, and they are not from this area. This campaign has been nationalized in
many
ways.
And we've been talking about that with the mayor for years, as many times as I've been here talking about the mayor's support from way out of here. And then obviously Mr. Curry, with being the Republican chairman, his success has come from outside of the city, bringing it here. You're right. There's nothing that interests me as a voter, and I sit in a newsroom every day, even though I know there should be issues, but I'm not hearing them.
Well, I mean, they both agree on dredging. They both like jobs. There's a lot of things where the candidates actually agree. So, what you get in a lot of these communications from campaigns, emails, ads, whatever, are things that basically draw partisan differences. You get a lot of attack communications, especially, from the PACs for both candidates. And, you're not really getting a lot of – you're not getting your Lincoln-Douglas debate, sort of – okay, we have bold differences here. I mean, there's a lot of overlap between these candidates' positions, and a lot of noise is being made just basically, you know, churning out the base. You know, who can draw the most Republicans, who can draw the most Democrats. It's not giving us the nuanced debate that Jacksonville voters want and deserve.
And moving on, is Republican Governor Rick Scott playing to his base? Scott announced yesterday he's suing the feds for, in his words, coercing Florida to expand Medicaid. Rick Scott said in an appearance on Fox News that the feds are bullying Florida as if they were the Sopranos. And I'm quoting from a statement released by the governor, "It's appalling that President Obama would cut off federal health care dollars to Florida in an effort to force our state further into Obamacare." This latest maneuver comes in the middle of a big tense standoff in Tallahassee between the state House and the state Senate. The Senate wants Florida to expand Medicaid to cover low-income patients. The House absolutely refuses to do so. This is all because a $2.2 billion program called the Low-Income Pool, or LIP, that helps Florida hospitals treat low-income patients is sunsetting. If this isn't resolved, what we're looking at potentially is the closure of hospitals like UF Health Jax, which treats the uninsured. John Burr, this is a huge issue.
It's a huge issue in Jacksonville. It's a huge issue in all the major cities in Florida. And it's an ideological train wreck. The solution is there. It's in front of us. It's called Obamacare. It's called Medicaid expansion. But for political and ideological reasons, the state legislature and the governor, who's kind of changed positions on this recently, are just adamantly opposed and won't go there. So we're headed for, you know, a really tough situation.
And here, we want your calls on this. Let us know your reaction to Governor Scott suing the feds over the standoff over Medicaid. Dan Scanlon.
Well, like it or not, Obamacare is here. Every attempt from the Supreme Court on down seems to have been unable to do anything more than chip away at certain provisions of it. And maybe the question is, or the answer is, accept it, move on, and work to reform it later. Because you're right, since the days of when it was called University Hospital, that hospital on 8th Street has handled indigent care. And no matter how much UF has tried to tell us that it is a teaching hospital, a research hospital, that is still where every homicide detective says the victim went, because that has the trauma one, the level one trauma center.
And I think the prospect of our only level one trauma center in this area closing, that is sending shivers down the spines of the city's power brokers, A.G. Gankarski, the people over at the Jacksonville Civic Council, a group of CEOs and community leaders. They have been trying to figure out what to do about this for a long time. They are very concerned about this.
It is a nightmare scenario. I mean, you have to see it for what it is. It is, you know, a trauma center, a level one trauma center. It's the source for indigent care. We have a lot of indigent population who needs it, source for care for Duval County Jail inmates, and so much more. And it's a research facility. And the Civic Council sees this happening. They've tried everything they could to get a stop. They had Aaron Bean at a press conference at UF Health, you know, a few weeks back, to no avail. You know, they're really struggling with this. And, you know, Rick Scott is playing politics with people's lives.
And here's Scott's point of view. He's saying that the feds are coercing the states to accept Medicaid expansion. Scott is saying that they're concerned that over time, Florida won't be able to absorb these costs. That's the governor's position.
And that's a new position. I mean, he two years ago, he was like, well, you know, I can go with Medicaid expansion, but, you know, I'll leave it up to the legislature.
It's red meat for the base.
The other thing that is going to really be hurt, UF, is the preventative care facility. They have made many inroads into the north side of Jacksonville. They're obviously setting up another hospital. They're out there trying to get the population healthier. That could also fall by the wayside.
Now, something else that's come to my attention, too, is that all of the hospital CEOs in Jacksonville, for example, if you talk to Hugh Green of Baptist Health, they have made noise about this, because should UF Health close, that will create a ripple effect and place an incredible strain on all of the other hospitals in our city, Baptist, St. Vincent's, Memorial, and on and on. It would not just impact UF Health, the former Shands.
No, they can't. They can't pick up the caseload. And you know what does it mean when a trauma one center closes? That means if you're in a car accident in Northeast Florida, you're not going to be life flighted to UF Health. You're going to, you know, if you could be life flighted to Baptist or one of the others, if, you know, they have the time and the wherewithal to handle your case because they're handling all the indigent care in town now. It's, you know, it, sometimes these things are portrayed as the people say, well, you know, they're just saying the sky is falling. If this really does come to pass, and it's got a pretty good chance that, you know, that there is not going to be funding, this LIP funding, and there's not going to be Medicaid expansion. If this does come to pass, the sky will fall and people will die.
And meanwhile, Democrats in Tallahassee calling Governor Scott's lawsuit a partisan stunt. Let's think about the end game of where this lawsuit will go and what will be the outcome of this legal action.
Well, ultimately, the federal system will prevail. I mean, we live in a federalist system. Conservatives make state rights arguments on, you know, many issues. This is just the latest iteration. And it's not going to end well for Rick Scott or Florida because, you know, ultimately, Obamacare, Affordable Health Care Act, whatever you want to call it, is the law of the land. Rick Scott's attempting to circumvent that for partisan reasons, looking at his Senate run, perhaps, or whatever his political future is. And, you know, it's really something that the Republicans, they have a legislative majority. And this is how you lose a legislative majority, by, you know, being too ideological and embodying the caricature that your opponents will paint.
Yes, because obviously your constituents, those senators and representatives, your constituents will start griping, especially in the southern part of the state where there is a lot of older population, when they realize that this is going to impact them. Plus also, we've been talking level one trauma center means you are staffed 24/7 with the doctors necessary. Yep. If Baptist or Memorial has to then start staffing, then prices go up everywhere.
Enough good things cannot be said about UF Health's level one trauma center. If you are in a horrible accident or you've been shot or anything bad happens to you, that center is staffed around the clock to save your life. Here's a tweet from Julie. The business community, religious followers, medical professionals, and insurers all want expanded Medicaid. Let's go to your calls, 549-2937. Mark on the South Side. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning. I just like to make the point that, you know, we're talking about expanding Medicaid and how the governor is playing to his base, but I think people just need to realize that basically the state that we're in, like, financially, is because of the people we vote for. You know, with a 30% turnout, we're essentially getting exactly what we all voted for.
Thanks for that, Mark. And he's right. The voters returned Rick Scott to office again. And it's not as though Rick Scott was being disingenuous about where he stood on the issues. He won the election fair and square with a conservative approach.
Right. But you have to look at what happened on the other side of the aisle. The Florida Democratic Party put up Charlie Crist. There was not enthusiasm for Charlie Crist and the party faithful. And this is after two other lackluster government, you know, gubernatorial campaigns on the side of the Democratic Party in the state. Right now, they're basically getting waxed by the Republican Party. And the Republican Party is, you know, dictating policy on every level. And they've done it for decades. And, you know, if the Democrats want to boost voter turnout, they've got to present a clear alternative. They've got to find a way to voice a populist case. Maybe this is the beginning for them.
At the same time, let me ask you all about this, because there is an obvious split between the state House and the state Senate. They are very far apart on this. The state Senate, and the old saying about Congress is that it's like a teacup, and you know the passions of the House cool in the saucer of the Senate. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That the Senate is the where cooler heads always prevail.
Right.
And so we're seeing the passions of the state House holding sway over these much more moderate members of the Florida Senate. more moderate Republicans who want this expansion.
Right. Well, it takes the two houses to get together and agree on a course of action to make law. The House, the Florida House, is just not going there. They're not even going to start the discussion. The Senate in Florida has taken a more practical approach to this What's going to happen when, you know, UF Health and Jackson in Miami and Tampa General, if they have to close down and people, you know, really start dying?
You know what, though? Let me just add.
they're going to have to call a special session like overnight and fix this thing.
Tampa General's Hospital and Miami-Dade's Hospital, the two public hospitals in those cities, they have independent taxing districts. UF Health does not. And so the Jacksonville Civic Council had discussed whether or not it would be feasible to float the idea of an independent taxing district mm-hmm. in Duval County for UF Health should the worst come to pass.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, that would obviously be a solution. The question is it politically viable in this city? Because, you know, the people would benefit from UF Health and, you know, civic leaders see its necessity. But if you have private health insurance, if you don't rely on the safety net, then it's not going to be an issue for you. And it's something that even though...
Well, yeah. It may be an issue. If you are in a terrible accident, you may not have any say on where you go. You go there, and that's where the best is. That's where the 24/7 is. And therefore, if we have enough people who can't get the trauma care they need,
right,
then the backlash rises even higher. Yeah.
But this is an issue that's going to be difficult to demagogue in favor of a taxing district. I mean, that's the reality of it politically. Mm-hmm.
Lots of heavy news this week, but finally, we always lighten up a little bit on Friday with a look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week across the state. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. All right, now only in Florida do exclusive gated communities hide schools for strippers. Yes, the loud all-night parties were starting to draw complaints at the upscale neighborhood in Northwest Hillsborough County. It turns out, though, the mansion was being used as a training academy for women who like to jump up and down on a stripper pole.
Is it accredited?
It's your baccalaureate degree.
Code violations and a misdemeanor charge have been leveled against the mansion's owner.
Aw.
Only in Florida do homeless people live high on the hog at Disney World. Police say Jeffrey Hawkins was homeless, but he was living in luxury hotels around the country after memorizing credit card numbers to pay for the rooms. Hawkins said he used the trick to pay for rooms at Disney hotels and many others. He was nabbed this time at Disney's Saratoga Springs Resort.
I like that.
I'm going to Disney World.
And finally, only in Florida do helicopter pilots decide to try to land on the Capitol's front lawn.
Gyrocopter.
You're right. Gyrocopter.
Thank you.
U.S. Capitol Police say the small gyrocopter with one occupant landed on the west lawn of the Capitol Wednesday. The small craft landed right in the middle of the lawn where the annual Christmas tree and 4th of July concert stages go. The culprit is 61-year-old Doug Hughes, a mailman from, you guessed it, Florida.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good way to use your golden years.
And thanks to our media panel, A.G. Gankarski, Dan Scanlon, and John Burr. Have a great weekend, guys.
You too.
Thank you.
Still to come, the sounds of Spring in the Blues with renowned blues guitarist Selwyn Birchwood and our own Blues Horizon host Andrew Wickman. But up next, Kentucky Derby flair comes to town. We'll tell you about it. That's in a moment.
Florida legislature is in session, and Capitol Report is your nightly connection to what's happening in Tallahassee as lawmakers debate and decide issues that affect all Floridians, such as expanding health care and gambling, protecting the state's water resources, private versus public schools, and prison reform. Hear Capitol Report each weeknight during the legislative session on this Florida Public Radio station.
That's Tuesday through Friday nights at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT. I'm Jessica Palumbo. Some of my favorite programs on WJCT include This American Life and the new investigative news show Reveal from host Al Letson. We all have our favorites, but WJCT can't keep them on the air without your support. Please visit WJCT.org or call 904-353-9528 now to fund your favorites. And thank you.
Hi, I'm Miguel Sanon.
I'm Nora Jones.
My name is Pedrito Martinez.
I'm Christian McBride with Jazz Night in America. Our new show is bringing you inside the jazz world. We're headed to concerts around the country, from New York to L.A. to D.C., and we're talking directly to musicians, finding out how and why they do what they do. Join me right here for Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. We'll grab your hat and bow tie and make plans to attend Catholic Charities Gala, Kentucky Derby style. The big event is coming up next Saturday at the Sawgrass Marriott. Special Events Director Carrie Warren is here now with a preview. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You know, the first Saturday in May is increasingly becoming cause for celebration, not just in Kentucky, but all over the country. People love these derby parties, don't they?
They really do. It's just another occasion to dress up, wear a hat, a bow tie, and
have a mint julep. And have some fun.
Exactly.
So tell us all about this event. What's going to be happening?
The event is at the Sawgrass Marriott, and it starts at 6:30. And we're going to start with a cocktail reception, a silent auction, and a bourbon and mint julep tasting from the guys at Grape and Grain Exchange in San Marco.
Very nice. And the dress code is fancy, fancy.
Well, we're asking derby attire. Definitely.
Derby attire. So the women in particular can really have fun with the hats and the dresses.
That's what we're going for. This way they can, it gives them something to do. I mean, instead of just the regular black dress, they can throw on a hat and have a great time.
And that's always exciting. And this benefits Catholic Charities, which is a wonderful organization. For people that aren't familiar with Catholic Charities, tell us a little bit about your mission.
Yes, all of the funds from, this is our largest fundraiser of the year. And all the proceeds go directly to our emergency assistance program. And that is one of our programs that it prevents homelessness right here in our community by helping people that have lost a job, gotten sick, helps them pay their utilities, their rent, and gives them job training, job counseling. So we're doing everything we can from our emergency assistance program to keep people in their homes and safe.
Right, which is so important. And, you know, Carrie, Catholic Charities is a great organization, and you don't just help people of the Catholic faith as well. Let's point that out.
Absolutely. 87% of the people that come to us that tell us what their affiliation is are not Catholic. So our mission is to help anyone, race, creed, color, that needs help.
So with all of that said, again, it's the Catholic Charities Gala Kentucky Derby style coming up next Saturday.
Next Saturday.
At the Sawgrass Marriott.
Yes. You can visit our website at ccbjacks.org for tickets. And we'd love to see you out there. It's going to be a great time.
And your raffle, I think, even includes a trip to San Francisco wine country. So how about that?
Yes, it does. We'd love to have you. You can call in. You don't have to be there to win. So you can go on our website. And it's a four-night trip out to San Francisco and Sonoma Valley. And it includes airfare.
Very nice. So. Go on out and have fun. Enjoy the Derby style. Special Events Director Carrie Warren, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
And in a moment, renowned blues guitarist Selwyn Birchwood. That's next.
Relax Radio WJCT 89.9 HD3 is your music station, playing the songs you remember best from the Beatles, Elvis, Frank Sinatra, Barbra Streisand, and Motown, 24 hours a day, only on WJCT 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
The Dinosaur Train is rolling into Orange Park. Thrasher Horn Center and WJCT present Jim Henson's Dinosaur Train Live, Buddy's Big Adventure, on Tuesday, May 12 at 6 p.m. See the beloved stars of the hit PBS series come to life on stage in your hometown for the first time. Join Buddy, Tiny, King, Don, and their family and friends in this fun-filled, interactive musical trip back in time. Tickets are on sale now at 904-276-6815 or thcenter.org.
Join us weeknights at 7 for music. From symphonies to the latest indie music, you'll hear it all weeknights at 7, only on 89.9 FM.
Deep below the sea, darling, on deep blue sea. Deep below the sea.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Finally, this hour, renowned blues guitarist Selwyn Birchwood is the winner of the Blues Foundation's 2013 International Blues Challenge, among other honors. And as the Beaches gears up for spring in the blues, our own Blues Horizon host Andrew Wickman joins us here in studio now with Selwyn. And guys, good morning. Great to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. So, Selwyn, it's an honor to have you in studio. Pretty exciting, all the awards you've gotten in the last few years.
Yeah, it's been a crazy couple years. We've been really just working our butts off, touring and trying to push our record. And ever since we won the Blues Challenge in 2013, it's just kind of been a snowball effect, and we've really been kind of picking up.
Andrew, our own Blues Horizon host, so much talent that you get to talk to. Selwyn's just the latest example of that.
It's wonderful, and he's a great example of that because I know he and I were chatting outside earlier, and I was telling him that his music has a wonderful feel to it. It's very organic. It's very, it doesn't have a polished feel to it, but it blends in with the classics on my show perfectly. And that's the best compliment I can give him.
Yeah. So what inspires you? How did you get into this genre?
Well, I never really connected with the music that everyone else was listening to when I was growing up. That was just on popular radio and that type of stuff. And I was playing guitar, and I was kind of getting bored with it because that's what I was playing. And I was actually going to quit guitar. And then a buddy of mine gave me a Jimi Hendrix CD. And as soon as I heard what he was doing, I was just blown away. And I wasn't as much, I don't want to say not into the music, but I was just really curious where he got his ideas from, because it sounded like such a bizarre sound. And when you dig back in his biography, you find nothing but the old blues guys. And, you know, once I heard the Muddy Waters and the Howlin' Wolves and the Buddy Guys and those kind of people, I felt like I found the sound that I was looking for. And what really sealed the deal for me was I saw Buddy Guy on stage when I was 17, and I didn't know what I was walking into. And when I saw him perform with that much energy and charisma and just sheer emotion and soul, I was like, whatever that is, that's what I want to do, you know, for the rest of my life, man.
So. Nice. Well, you're going to be on the main stage at the upcoming Spring in the Blues Festival. Very exciting.
Yep. This is the third year they've had us back in a row. And it's just really exciting to be back over here. It's a great festival, and it's always a good time. And, you know, it's not normal that they have a festival of that magnitude that's free. So it's a great thing to be able to have that in your backyard.
Well, that's what's great about festivals like this is that you may not know the names of the faces, but you're going to love the music and you'll recognize it. And it's
That's what's great about blues is it's an emotional thing. It's a feel. It's not just technique, you know.
Absolutely.
Now we've got a performance from you, Selwyn. What are we listening to?
I figured to do the title track off the record. So it's the name of the record is Don't Call No Ambulance. So I'll do that track for you.
Here he is, Selwyn Birchwood.
Falling down. Oh, I feel so good, baby. Lord, I just might fall down. Don't you call no ambulance. Don't you call no ambulance. Don't you call no ambulance. Lord, I'll find my own right home. At home. Oh, I feel so fine, baby. Wash my worries and wine. But don't you call no ambulance. Don't you call no ambulance. But don't you call no ambulance. Lord, I'll find my own ride home.
Everybody, and you'll be on the main stage tonight at the Beaches for Spring in the Blues. Thanks for giving us this preview.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Andrew, you're going to have some special shows this weekend, too.
Absolutely. As people are driving home from the festival, they will have 89.9 to turn on and continue the Blues Festival. We're going to do the 50 blues songs everybody should know. Not necessarily the ones you do know, but we're going to have the ones, familiar ones, and everything you should know, and artists like Selwyn. To blend in and make it a wonderful coda to the evening after a day of blues.
Excellent. And only on 89.9 will you hear this incredible musical programming. Blues Horizon host Andrew Wickman, Selwyn Birchwood, the winner of the Blues Foundation's 2013 International Blues Challenge. Guys, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And we're going to close with another track off Selwyn's new CD. Enjoy the music, have fun at the festival, and thanks for listening to First Coast Connect. This is our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. Our show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Next on Diane Rehm, a look at the week's top national news stories. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. Have a great weekend. We'll be back at 9 a.m. Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.